I call the Senate Health and Social Services Committee to order at 1:32 p.m. on Friday, February 14, 2020. Happy Valentine's Day. We're meeting today in room 205 of the Capitol Building. Committee members present today are Senator Geisel, Senator Schauer. We're expecting Senator Schauer. He's not here yet. Senator Begich and myself, Senator Wilson, Senator Von Imhoff, Vice Chair, is excused. As a courtesy, please remember to silence your cell phones. This afternoon, we'll take up House Bill 29, Insurance Coverage for Telehealth, presented by Representative Ivy Sponholz. This is an initial hearing on this bill. We plan to hear an overview, a sectional analysis from the sponsor, and take public testimony and invited testimony. Available for questions are Larry Wingheiser's not quite here yet. Dr. Stuart Ferguson is not on the phone yet, but we do have Vicki Knapp from Matsu Health Services on the phone, and at this time we'll invite Ivy Sponholz and her trustee staff, Casey Consort, to the table and ask them to put themselves on the record. You may begin when you're ready.
Good afternoon. I'm Representative Ivy Sponholz, District 16 in East Anchorage, and with me is Casey Consort, who is our University of Alaska Ted Stevens intern for this year, who's carrying the legislation for our office. So HB 29, Insurance Coverage for Telehealth, is about increasing access to care and reducing the cost of health care for Alaskans by requiring insurers to cover telehealth in the state of Alaska. Access to telehealth in Medicaid was one of the core elements of Senate Bill 74, Medicaid Reform Bill, which passed in 2016. And it's already covered by and provided by Alaska's tribal health system, where it's been so effective in those markets. We want to expand it to cover the private insurance market as well. Telehealth services are important to increase access to health care in rural Alaska and for behavioral health issues, to support health care transformation in the state of Alaska, and to reduce unnecessary medical travel. So it will, HB 29 and insurance coverage for telehealth will increase access to healthcare by making it easier for Alaskans throughout our state to access primary care, behavioral health care, and specialty care using telehealth delivery models. That means that Alaskans will be able to have access to healthcare even if there is no provider of that health service in their home community. This is particularly important in rural Alaska and to address our substance abuse and behavioral health crisis that we have. HB 29 supports a hub and spoke model of healthcare delivery, where you could have a community health provider providing your primary care, a hospital in a large community, and see other providers via telehealth for consultations, behavioral health care, and other services. It will help us save money by reducing the need for unnecessary medical travel. This could be travel from rural Alaska or to your local doctor's office if you live in an urban community like Anchorage, when you have limited mobility or you have young children or it's unusual hours. Improving access can help reduce unnecessary emergency room visits. Couple of examples. Imagine your baby has a fever in the middle of the night. And if you could have a telehealth consultation, you could avoid an expensive emergency room visit while ensuring that they're getting the health care that they need. There's new technologies that allow for providers to take temperatures and other kinds of things via telehealth. Imagine you're trying to decide whether you want to go to the emergency room for stitches after cutting yourself after hours. A telehealth visit could allow a healthcare provider to actually look at your wound and determine whether it was serious enough to go to the emergency room that evening, or whether you could just put a butterfly on it overnight and go get stitches in the morning. So the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium quantified cost savings for its for those covered by it or provided service by that tribal health system. It was $12.4 million for telehealth in FY19, and over 8 years, they saved $70 million in unnecessary travel and unnecessary care through the use of telehealth. So we want to bring this innovation into the private market. It's also very important, expanding access to telehealth, to transforming our healthcare system. Lori Wingheiser, the director of Alaska's Division of Insurance, calls the future of the hospital virtual. And I think that, you know, I've described a couple of examples, but there are many more moving forward where the use of telehealth will help to provide, you know, increase access to care. And then there are some healthcare providers, even in urban Alaska, that are encouraging people who have communicable diseases like or even the flu, to stay home and to get their health care via a telehealth visit. My own health care provider in Anchorage does this. If you have the flu, they don't want you spreading it to people as you're driving around, and it's incredibly uncomfortable when you're really sick to go through the effort to go into an office. It's easier to have a telehealth visit. So for all of these reasons that I've described, we've got a broad range of support for HB 29. It's supported by healthcare providers, including Orion Health, Matsu Health Services, Teladoc, Dr. Jill Gaskill, Medical Park Family Practice, insurers like Moda Health, and organizations like the Alaska State Nursing and Hospital and Nursing Home Association, the Alaska Native Health Board, Mind Matters Research, the Alaska Commission on Aging, the Matsu Health Foundation, and the AARP. So Casey Kasort, our University of Alaska intern, has a presentation and is available to do a sectional analysis if you'd like.
Yes, but before you start, Ms. Casey, we just want to let the record reflect that Sandra Schauer joined us a while ago. You may begin when you're ready.
Hi, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Casey Kasort. I'd like to talk with you about the purpose of House Bill 29 and go through the four sections. If you have any questions at any time, please feel free to interrupt me. As I'm sure you already know, Alaska faces unique challenges to accessing healthcare, including our geography and our limited transportation infrastructure. We also have some of the highest healthcare costs in the country because patients often have to travel to access care, especially because our small population means there are fewer providers and even fewer specialists within our communities. So telehealth usually comes in three forms. Interactive telehealth occurs when a patient and provider connect through a secure video or audio call. This is often used for behavioral health services and is especially helpful for patients with limited mobility, like elderly patients or Alaskans living with disabilities. Store and forward telehealth is a sending of images or pre-recorded video, which is sometimes used by providers for getting an expert opinion, like sending an x-ray to a consultant to get a better opinion before making a diagnosis. Self-monitoring is the third type of telehealth, and it occurs when patients record their symptoms for remote monitoring. This is particularly helpful with high-risk patients, like, for example, a patient who's just left the hospital. They don't need that kind of intensive hospitalization anymore, but they do need to check in with a provider regarding their symptoms every few hours. According to the Department of Health and Social Services FY19 Annual Medicaid Reform Report, the top diagnoses and conditions treated via telehealth last year were behavioral health, followed by injuries, poisoning, and ear infections. So right now, telehealth is being used all over the state, especially within the tribal health system, and non-tribal health organizations have also been adopting telehealth across Alaska. Over a decade ago, Providence became Alaska's base hospital offering telehealth-based stroke care assessment statewide, and their web-based system can connect neurologists with distant stroke patients within seconds, 24 hours a day. Providence has submitted a letter of support for House Bill 29. So telehealth is on the rise because it works, and it's a huge cost saver. Although most providers, unfortunately, do not track their cost savings associated with telehealth, a study by the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium found that telehealth averted the need for travel in 40% of cases, and that number increases to 75% where patients are seeing specialists. Patients are also seen much more quickly. The same study found that 65% of patients were seen within the same day, and half of patients are seen within an hour. The benefits of telehealth are numerous. Besides reducing travel costs and offering faster access to primary care and specialists, telehealth improves access to care in rural and remote areas. It allows contagious patients to stay home while still getting the care they need. It enables faster care in emergency situations like domestic violence or self-harm. It offers better support for home caregivers, which allows elderly Alaskans and Alaskans with disabilities to live independently and at home longer and with better support. And finally, all of this is possible with zero impact on the state budget. However, right now, some providers are reluctant to invest in telehealth technology because not all insurers do reimburse for telehealth services. Additionally, there's a disparity between public and private access to telehealth because Medicaid does cover services delivered via telehealth, but private insurers do not consistently cover these services. This is where House Bill 29 comes in. House Bill 29 increases access to healthcare services, allows patients to see their primary care physicians and specialists, and decreases travel costs associated with healthcare in Alaska by requiring insurers to cover telehealth delivery of the services they already cover. Section 1 of the bill requires private health insurance plans regulated by the Alaska Division of Insurance to cover health care delivered by a licensed provider via telehealth without requiring an in-person meeting. Section 2 defines health care insurer and telehealth. Telehealth has the same definition as in AS 4705-270 subsection E, which defines telehealth as, quote, the practice of healthcare delivery, evaluation, diagnosis, consultation, or treatment using the transfer of healthcare data through audio, visual, or data communications performed over two or more locations. Sections 3 and 4 of the bill set an effective date of July 1st, 2020. That concludes the sectional. At this time, I have not received verbal or written opposition against HB 29. I have spoken with the largest insurers in Alaska, and none of them have expressed opposition. In fact, Moda Health has submitted a formal letter of support. And as Representative Sponholz mentioned, this bill has broad support from healthcare providers, insurers, and healthcare organizations. I have asked Alaska Division of Insurance Director Lori Winghire, Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium Chief Information Officer Dr. Stuart Ferguson, and Matsu Health Services Chief Operating Officer Vicki Knapp to provide testimony, and the following experts are available to answer questions. Dr. Wade Erickson from Capstone Express, Claudia Tucker, the Vice President of Government Affairs at Teladoc Health, Marie Marks, Legislative Counsel on Insurance and Healthcare, and Sarah Bailey, Alaska Division of Insurance Life and Health Supervisor. I'm happy to answer any questions now.
Are there any questions from committee members? Senator Begich?
I have a number. First, I want to thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to say that was a superb presentation, very easy for me to follow, and I'm not an expert in that part of the field. The first question I have is just you mentioned briefly, you touch on the HIPAA requirements, and I'm just curious about you mentioned a secure data, so that ties into the HIPAA requirements. So does the bill account for that, or is there what is the answer to meeting the HIPAA stipulations?
So. Absolutely. Through the chair, Mr. Senator, all providers of telehealth in Alaska must be licensed in Alaska to provide that service, and they must be registered with the Telemedicine Business Registry. And in order to do that, they must use HIPAA-approved telemedicine technology, and that includes video conferencing or instant messaging, email type services that all encrypt their data and monitor for data breaches, and those are the ones that receive a certification for being HIPAA compliant. Other services are not HIPAA compliant and not legally allowed.
We have follow up to that? Additional question that kind of goes with that.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So in addition to the compliance, you just mentioned a number of technologies that some people may find difficult to either access or have the ability to utilize, maybe because of education or skill set. Also, we have situations in this state that have significantly lower bandwidth. And does the bill take into account any of that, or does it simply just I don't know how it might, but does the bill take into account those kinds of considerations which might create a disparity in the health system for those who might readily access telehealth and those who don't? That's not opposition. I'm just wondering if we are looking at that issue.
Senator Begich, through the chair, this is Representative Ivy Sponholz. The bill does not address access in terms of the underlying technology. What it does is allow for payment, for reimbursement for services provided via telehealth. There are a variety of efforts being undertaken right now to improve access both to broadband in rural Alaska, which will help to support access to telehealth. The technologies are evolving very quickly. We've seen the number of of HIPAA compliant softwares expand pretty significantly in the last few years, and many of the companies that have traditionally done video teleconferencing for businesses are now expanding into telemedicine because it's such a significant market. Every American needs healthcare, and telemedicine is the future, and so We think that the market is going to solve some of those solutions, and there are other areas of government that are working on the issues you raised.
And just one final comment, and I appreciate that. I get my little shout out for the broadband bill, but the last thing is just you had mentioned the insurance industry did not express opposition to you in writing or otherwise, to your knowledge, and so you're fairly confident that this is a bill that would be supported by the insurance industry as well.
Through the chair, Mr. Senator, at this time, in my speaking with the representatives from these industries, they have all expressed either neutrality or support.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I hope that telehealth is part of our developing coronavirus plan that you presented to us the other day, because it ought to be, given the whole idea of holding people in quarantine, Mr. Chairman, you know, the idea that mm-hmm. for a very invasive virus, this might be one of the answers. I'd love to know that it was covered.
Senator Schauer?
I do. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple questions. Outside my lane again, I keep caveat on that in healthcare. So I just have questions because I don't understand how some of it works. The identity, because you talked about HIPAA laws and how this would work, because one of the things is people's identity being stolen, being used by somebody else for malicious purposes in a variety of ways, and a lot of that is healthcare data because you can do all kinds of things with it. So what about the other side of the equation? Heard you talk about they had to be HIPAA compliant, the ones that would do this. What about the identity of folks on the other end of the line calling? How does that this is more maybe a question of how it works, or are there provisions in this to do that? Because if somebody had somebody's data, they can call and get a lot more information if you can't prove who it is on the other end of the line. So how does this address that, or does it address that?
Senator Schauer, through the chair, all providers who are providing health care via telemedicine are required to use HIPAA-compliant software, and that software is designed to protect the identity, any details relating to any of the issues that are discussed, and keep that information very secure. There is always, anytime you have an electronic communication of any kind, there's always the risk of breach. The technology is evolving constantly, as are hackers who would try to break into the system. And so I think it's, you know, it's a valid concern to always be thinking about this, but our ability to protect people's privacy via technology is growing. And there are, as we referenced earlier, the tribal health system has been providing healthcare via telehealth for many years, as have, other areas of the marketplace. They've been doing it very effectively. The technology has to be done very well, and that's the reason that you're required to use HIPAA-compliant software. It's the reason you're not allowed, actually, to just call on a regular telephone or cell phone line and have, a doctor's appointment that way, because it's not secure. And actually, the whole impetus of this bill, and I didn't mention this early, originated because I called a healthcare provider of mine in Anchorage after I joined the legislature in 2016 and wanted to schedule a telehealth visit with my healthcare provider, and she said, I'm not able to do that. It's not covered by your insurance, and then I subsequently learned that in part that not only was it not covered by our insurance at that time, it since has been covered by the Alaska Cares product, but there's also, I learned a lot about the technology that's required to ensure the privacy so that it's secure, and my healthcare provider didn't have that software and so wasn't able to deliver that service. It was a two-part problem, so the security is a serious issue.
Couple follow-ups, unless you
want.
So I'll ask a couple more, but just so I follow up on this, this really is for me, and I apologize, it's kind of a little bit educational because, again, I don't understand how some of it works, but more pointed to the question, and I acknowledge all that, and anybody can always try to abuse it, et cetera, but how do they verify the person on the other end? And that's what I'm talking about. I understand the protection side of it, but if I'm a little more precise in my question, so the person picks up the phone, right, that's me, and I'm calling you the health provider, and I say, I'm XYZ. I'm going to assume, I guess, that there are protocols that you would run through to verify their identity, so you're not just talking to somebody you think it is when it's really Ivan in Russia who's trying to get your data for a credit card. And I'm being a little facetious like the commercials on TV, but that's really – how does that – and this may not address that, and it may already be taken care of, but that's why I'm asking. So how are we protecting the consumer by making sure that they're – when you're picking up that phone, it really is the consumer?
So
I don't know.
If I can, I think sure. I can answer some of that. The first slide talked about three different types of services. I know in the tribal health and some behavioral health, they have interactive visits where you go into a provider and they're asking for a consult, and that provider verifies in person that is a person that is indeed there. The state has a service through Teladoc, and my provider has a service where normally it's a two-step identification. They'll ask you your date of birth. You know, they'll ask you some personal history information, or I mean your privacy information, and that's the steps of validation that they go through. And so they do their best of their due diligence. But you're right, you know, if I had your personal information, if I had that, I can act as if I'm sitting in your shower. But normally there are steps that they try to take to avoid that, and that's the best that they could do without, you know, some type of biometric scan. I do know a company that does do a biometric scan in terms of their telemedicine. They'll ask, you know, the person to put their thumbprint on the little scanner, and that sends off to the same person, so it's more instantaneous, an app through their that they have through their phone. That also meets the HIPAA-compliant nature, but it's an emerging thing, and I know that normally the tribal health, they do a lot of theirs through sort of an in-person, through a tribal health aid type of person. You go into the village, and you don't have the provider there, or through their dental
dental health aid therapy.
Yes. And that they will get their consults through through that verification. But normally they try to have a couple additional steps of just validation, and it's an ongoing field. But yes, if you know anyone can act with anyone over the phone, if you have their identification and numbers, which is alarming as such, but it's really hard to try to get those companies to invest in those higher sort of biometric type of scans or other things to validate that person is truly them. Senator Schauer.
Like I said, these are more questions, Representative Swanholz, just trying to get them right. Senator Begich asked a couple of questions, so I think same kind of thing, so thanks for that. And then just one more follow-up kind of on something that you mentioned, and I agree with Senator Begich. That was a really good presentation. When you said we're kind of mandating private company or, you know, the private market to do this, depending on who they are, one of the cautions I always am looking for is making sure that we're not necessarily sometimes inserting our finger into the middle of the private market and forcing them to do things if it's not appropriate or they're not interested in it. So you had made a mention of something about not everybody was doing it, or there was something you said that I can't remember exactly about maybe some didn't want to do it. So within this, have there, and I know you said everybody's been positive so far, but are there companies that prefer not to do this or don't want to do this and we're forcing them to, based on market conditions or what they would prefer to do based on their coverage and how it works for them? And I understand that I'm not trying to say this sounds like, sounds good. Let's be upfront. This sounds good to me, like this is a good thing to do and saving money and access. It totally sounds great. I'm trying to think of the things that might be a catch. Are we overstepping our bounds on any of this where we're forcing companies to do things that maybe are not in the best interest of what they're trying to accomplish? And so it's kind of an open-ended question. And I know that took a long time to answer because, again, I'm trying to figure out how to ask these questions in this field. But I know there's experts on this board. I'm just not one of them. So you had said something about that effect. Could you just maybe clear that up a little more?
Senator Schauer, I think I'll take this through the chair, that what we're seeing is that insurance companies are beginning to provide the service, but there's unequal coverage, and that providers – healthcare providers are reticent to make investments in the infrastructure that's necessary, particularly the HIPAA-compliant software and any other electronic equipment that they need to purchase if they can't be sure that they're going to be able to recoup their investment when they're providing these services. And so this is about sort of creating clarity both for the insurance providers that we, in fact, do want them to cover this in the state of Alaska. And this is an access and an equity issue. We need people in the private market to have the same access to low-cost, high-quality healthcare services that those that are covered by Medicaid have. And then the other piece is, you know, predictability in the market for healthcare providers. Healthcare providers need to know what is going to be covered and what is not going to be covered. We made a huge policy call when we allowed for originally the coverage of a telehealth for behavioral health care services, and then we expanded it to all health care services, but really largely within Medicaid. And what we're saying now is we want to expand that to everybody else so that we have sort of stability in the market, and health care providers in the private market can go ahead and make the investments in the kinds of equipment and HIPAA-compliant software that they need to provide this care and know that they're going to be able to recoup that investment.
And if I could follow up to Senator Schauer's question, I think, and I don't want to speak for the senator, but I think the question, what I'm understanding is that he's asking if insurance companies to provide this coverage, are we asking them to make an infrastructure investment which may be passed on to the consumers, raising the rates for consumers? That's how I took that question.
Can I follow up with that?
Yes.
Because it's the same thing. That's really what it is. It may not cost the state, but there is a cost associated with this, and we are going to mandate that companies are going to have to spend money. And Senator Wilson did a much better job than I did of encapsulating. That's what I was trying, I guess, to get to. There is a cost to this, and it's going to drive that. So there you go. Thank you.
Senator Schauer, through the chair, and I guess in part to the chair, the investment that we're asking to be made is really being done by healthcare providers. And healthcare providers need certainty in terms of compensation to recoup the cost, the capital cost for investments. The cost that I think that you're referencing is for insurance companies. And what we've tried to do is illustrate that there are significant savings by reducing unnecessary healthcare travel, by, you know, sort of highlighting and lifting up the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium's cost savings. I think we referenced it, and I'm not sure if you were in the room when I mentioned this, but ANTHC estimates that they saved the state of Alaska $14.4 million in FY19 as a result of using telehealth. And over the course of the last 8 years, they estimate that they saved the state of Alaska $70 million. That's very significant. And when I think about people in your district, being able to avoid, you know, unnecessary travel sometimes also means getting access to care sooner. If you can, you know, get a wound looked at using your cell phone and a HIPAA-compliant software, when you're not sure, do I need to do an hour and a half drive into Matsu Regional and it's 10 p.m. at night, and I've been in this situation out in Talkeetna with my husband trying to figure out, did he need to get to a hospital, did he not need to get to a hospital? That could really help drive healthcare decisions to make sure people are getting their healthcare issues, are getting addressed right away, and reducing unnecessary, you know, travel expense that we spend a lot of money on in the state of Alaska. And we've saved a lot of money using telehealth in the public sector. We'd like to expand that to the private, to those of us that are covered in the private market as well.
Senator Baggage.
Thank you. I think, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Senator Schauer. I think maybe even a different way of looking at this is it could be a cost savings to the insurance industry, mm-hmm. in particular, because the insurance industry now has to cover significantly higher costs when they reimburse. They have their, you know, the rates that are paid, but if they can lower the cost of the service that they're required to provide by, in fact, providing a cheaper option, that actually lowers the burden on an insurance company and quite frankly, ought to increase profit margins and might lead to lower costs in the long run for the consumer when it comes to their insurer price. So rather than passing a cost along, those insurance companies might find themselves passing a savings along. And I think that actually, that's the thing that attracted me most to the coverage issue when you were describing the monetary thing. So I think the question is very good, very well presented, and because it's a question we always have. Are we mandating something that's going to end up costing more? In this case, we may be mandating something that could end up profiting the insurance industry, profiting the patient, and profiting the state of Alaska, if we could use the word profit. So I think it's maybe a triple win, potentially.
And if I may, we do have a Moda Insurance Company has signed a letter of support, submitted a letter of support. And I'll just sort of highlight as well, when we talk about the cost of medical travel, it's pretty expensive. If we could eliminate just, you know, a couple of medevacs every single year, we could save significant money. In the state of Alaska, a medevac can cost you $100,000. So if you can save a few of those a year, that's going to pay for itself pretty quickly in terms of the bottom line for an insurance company. As well as individual Alaskans.
I believe when I was going to school, my MBA in Health Service Administration, Medicaid cost to the state for travel alone was at just about 50. When I graduated, it was at $56 million. Now we're approaching almost $70 million of Medicaid travel alone in the state, which, you know, you count that on a yearly basis, we could have bought a couple of fleets of planes and and provided that service. But Senator Geisel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So Representative Spunholz, I'm going to wear two hats. I'm going to wear a hat as a private health care provider, right? So lived in that world. And also as an advocate for our state budget. Okay, so, and my questions are only to highlight challenges, mm-hmm. not to disparage what you're trying to do here, which is a good thing. The presentation was excellent. The points you bring out on slide number 5, spot on, except I would argue the last one, which says zero impact on the state budget. And I'll get into why I think that may not be 100% true. So, you know, the questions have revolved around the infrastructure that providers will need, HIPAA-compliant communication tools, right? That is a cost. In fact, there are providers that are reluctant to even invest in the electronic medical record, right, EHR. And you can think of that much like I think about investment on the North Slope and drilling a well and cash flow. Because initially when you dig that well, you are spending money. So you're below the profit margin. And then it takes several years of producing oil before you rise above and are actually making a profit. Well, the same applies to investment in this kind of infrastructure, the electronic medical record or telehealth stuff. So while it may not be a direct cost to the state, it is a cost to that private provider. And this stuff is expensive. Now, when we initially talked about authorizing telehealth in Alaska, one of the caveats we put on it is the provider that is providing that health without actually being in contact with the patient must transmit a record of that visit, that telehealth visit, to the person's primary care provider, who may not be the person providing this telehealth visit. So I want to make sure that that is not being eroded. You mentioned that, I think you mentioned that Teladoc has signed on to this. That takes me to Alaska Hire. Mm-hmm. Mm. That was a discussion when we talked about telehealth. Teladoc is a Lower 48 organization. These are Lower 48 healthcare providers of various certifications. Are we eroding the Alaska Hire, right? The access to our Alaska physicians and other healthcare providers. It is true, I agree with you about ANTHC, Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium. They have done phenomenal work with telehealth, and they've been doing it for many, many years. I totally believe that they have that kind of savings. But remember, they are a closed system. I was taking a gentleman, a healthcare provider from Greenland around Anchorage many years, it was probably 8 years ago. And so we visited ANTHC and Providence and whatnot. And he commented to me, you know, here in Alaska, you guys actually have three healthcare systems. You have the private healthcare system, you have Medicaid, and then you have Native Health. Three separate systems that have different rules, different reimbursements. Anyway, I thought it was an interesting observation. But ANTHC have done phenomenal work, but they are a closed system. They are federally funded. I'm not sure it's going to translate for the state of Alaska. And that brings me to the last piece. Well, it's not actually the last piece. I have a couple more. But the 80th percentile rule. Right, and you know what that is. I know Representative Spunholz because we've talked about it a lot, and I've had a bill to alter that. Certainly worked with Director Wing Hire on that. But my question is, how will that reimbursement, how will the 80th percentile impact reimbursement if that telehealth provider is outside of the network? Let's say the individual contacts an emergency room with that laceration question that you proposed, right? But the ER doc is out of network. You know, is that actually going to help costs? And remember, Alaska Retirement and Benefit, the people that provide our health care insurance, pays at the 90th percentile. That is a little-known fact that is not fully appreciated. So we pay even more in the state of Alaska. And the last thing I would say is you presented some great facts, and if a consumer was listening to this, they would say, wow, that's awesome. My baby has a fever in the middle of the night, and I can just call Teladoc and find out, you know, what I should do. It's pretty hard to diagnose an ear infection over the phone. It's pretty hard to diagnose an infant's source of fever over the phone without doing a urine analysis, which is the most common cause of a fever in an infant. So it won't necessarily alleviate the necessity of actually contacting a physical healthcare provider in a clinic. But that is not to say that I don't support this. There are caveats here that we have to appreciate and perhaps find answers to, like reimbursement rates.
Yeah, sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's it. I'm done.
Yep, those are all
for now.
Those are all well good points. Representative Sponholz.
Yeah, so I'll start at the bottom and work my way up to the top.
Sure.
So I was taking notes. So Senator Giesel, through the chair, you're absolutely correct that telehealth doesn't eliminate the need for every emergency room visit or every clinic visit. It never will. There's always going to be a time when visiting the physician, being there is the absolute best thing to do. Telehealth increases access to care, and it can reduce travel, and it can reduce unnecessary emergency room visits a lot of the time. And sometimes it can also help you get to an emergency room if what you really need to do that is, and you tend to be a tough guy who's, you know, muscles through things like some of us in this room might be. So it can help us get the level of care that we need, and I would liken it to through the nurse line. It's the next level of the nurse line. When we call our Alaska Care nurse line, we get really good, high-quality advice from healthcare providers that are experts in their field about what level of care we should be getting and how seriously we should be taking something. And, you know, a high-quality telehealth visit is the next level of that because it can introduce other levels of additional information for a healthcare provider. I can't underscore enough how important it is for access to behavioral health care, because we just have a shortage of behavioral health care providers, and you're never going to have a psychiatrist in Healy, for example. But you could call a psychiatrist from Healy, you know, in a HIPAA-compliant software environment and, you know, have visits that way. So it will increase access to care. Regarding your observation about the 80th percentile, this bill does not change the underlying fundamentals of our healthcare economic system. It's not designed to do that, and so there'll still be the problems that you discuss, you know, that you reference with the 80th percentile. This bill doesn't profess to try to solve this. This is a very specific, small fix that we're proposing to make. We do have three tiers of healthcare, three systems of healthcare in the state of Alaska, but I'll just point out that two of the three of those already have access to telehealth pretty much universally, and it's those of us that are covered in the private market that don't have access to that. And it's not that the private market, isn't open to it. It's just that, you know, innovation happens often, you know, it's slowly and then in fits, and sometimes you have to just nudge it along a little bit. And it was my own personal experience with not being able to get healthcare via, you know, a distance from a provider I've been seeing for 20 years in Anchorage that, you know, really nudged me to sort of push this conversation along. We need to be able to be sure that people can get access to healthcare when they need it, if it is all possible. You raised the question of Alaska Hire, the question, and I'll just sort of like flesh it out a little bit more, is could we end up with a system where we have healthcare providers from the lower 48 providing healthcare and sort of nudging out healthcare providers in the state of Alaska? And that is a concern that I have as well. I think it's really important that in Alaska that we have as many of the, you know, experienced professionals in all ranges of specialty right here in Alaska so that we have that expertise here. It's important. I also want to make sure that healthcare providers that are, you know, trying to support themselves and the rest of their team members in their functionally small businesses, most of the time, most healthcare providers are small business people, are able to, you know, have a stable marketplace. And I do not want to undermine that. But when we looked at the telemedicine registry. There's 369 providers licensed in the telemedicine business registry. 254 of those are Alaskan. So that's 69% of them are Alaska-based. And we still have a shortage of some healthcare providers in the state of Alaska. We have a shortage of psychiatrists in the state of Alaska. And so, you know, I met with Anchorage Community Mental Health Services, which also provides the mental health services in Fairbanks. They're the community mental health provider in Fairbanks as well. They don't have enough psychiatrists, and they are struggling to recruit enough of them. And so they have a psychiatrist on contract in Arizona who helps does the work for them. Would they prefer that they be an Alaskan psychiatrist? They would, and I would prefer that they be so as well. But until then, I think we're going to need to continue to have access to some of those specialists in particular. I'm not really interested in providing, you know, an easier way for us to support doctors in the lower 48 to make business, you know, and nurse practitioners, with all due respect there, Madam President, outside of the state of Alaska to provide health care in Alaska, but we do have an access problem, and this presents a remedy to us. I just want to make sure I'm covering all of your questions. Oh, and then there is the transmittal record of the telehealth visit to your primary care provider. We are not proposing any other changes to the telemedicine in the state of Alaska. We don't want to erode telemedicine as it is and all of the important work that's been done on that. The only thing that we're changing here is just requiring private insurers in the private market, which is about 17% of the market, I believe, in the state of Alaska, to cover telehealth. That's the only change. So we're not undermining any of the rest of the important safeguards that we put in place to make sure that people are getting good care and there's nice warm handoffs between somebody you see via telehealth and your primary care provider. For example, if you did see somebody like through Teladoc or something like that. The infrastructure cost, I think, was close to the top of the list. And you're right, there's a cost with purchasing infrastructure. Information technology systems are expensive, the electronic equipment is expensive. What we are seeing, though, is that the healthcare market wants to do this. They'd like to do this more. Dr. Jill Gaskill will testify in the next hearing. I don't believe that she's on the line right now, but she has testified in the past, and I believe intends to this time, that she likes providing healthcare this way, that this is, you know, that this is a part of her care delivery model, and she operates at Medical Park Family Practice, right, in Anchorage at, you know, at Lake Otis and Northern Lights. She's the person who says you should, if you've got the flu, stay home and do a telemedicine visit with her. But, you know, healthcare providers, they need to know predictably that they're going to be able to be compensated, and she would like to know, and a lot of other healthcare providers would like to know, that all people that they provide healthcare services to will be reimbursed for telehealth and not just some of them. Because then she can just be making decisions based on what's best for the patient instead of what insurance companies will cover or not cover. And I think that that puts, you know, the decision in the hands of the healthcare provider and the small business owners that are providing that healthcare rather than in the decisions of insurance companies. And that's where I think those decisions should lie. And then back to the state budget piece. The zero impact to the state budget is that we don't expect there to be any additional. There's no fiscal note associated with this bill. There's no capital equipment that we're asking the state of Alaska to purchase. Our health plan already covers it. We already cover telehealth for Medicaid patients, which is the bulk of our healthcare services in the state of Alaska. I don't know, actually. You raised the question of whether it's covered by under retiree plans, and I don't know the answer to the question that, and we'll look that up just, you know, for all of our edification and share that with you. But we're not asking the state to build any new infrastructure. We're simply saying that we think that insurance companies in the state of Alaska should be covering telehealth services, and at some point we'd like to partner with the committee's chair on a committee substitute potentially that would also require telehealth pay parity for within the private market, so we can just make sure that telehealth doesn't or that allows for can you remind me the details? I don't want to misstate here.
Through the chair. So a telehealth pay parity would ensure that insurance companies are reimbursing providers who use telehealth at the same rate as in-person. And this is widely supported. And we had our bill the way it was, and then we had many providers reach out to us with this interest, and so we're looking at that at this time.
And this was in response to a couple of providers who reached out to us who said, we want to make sure that we're going to get compensated at the same rate, whether it's telehealth or in person, because as a provider, you know, you're providing the same care when you do a consultation on a laceration, you know, in person as you're doing via distance. And we want to make sure there's parity there. So there'll be, I believe, a committee substitute on that topic later on.
Follow-up, Senator?
I'm pondering this. Wow, pay parity with an in-person visit. That's interesting. The overhead costs, of course, are quite different, mm-hmm. right? You don't have a medical assistant taking the patient into the room. You're not using the room. Interesting. I guess I would have to think about that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yep. Senator Bennett?
Yes, I have a question. I just wanted to clarify that the bill doesn't require a company, a healthcare company, to provide telehealth. It just provides coverage. So that's still a company's decision. Mm-hmm. So we're not mandating that a company provide telehealth. So that's of some comfort to people who might have a sole proprietorship or something like that, mm-hmm. or who may choose to not go to the app because they have perhaps a clientele that doesn't want to go to an app. And then the other, medical costs here are quite high. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I forgot to thank you. Sorry. But medical costs here are quite high. Telehealth, which is out of state, I assume has cheaper costs. But this would actually, in a sense, if you're a higher cost medical person here, but you know that you can provide telehealth and it would be covered by the insurance, it actually becomes a more attractive option potentially than going to the dock in a box in the lower 48. I would think, at least for me, it would. Right now, if I had to make a choice, I am covered under the retirement plan. So, but if I had to make a choice and I had a telehealth offering from somebody here or somebody that might be less expensive there, I think I would be inclined to take that telehealth offering here, because if indeed there was an issue, I'd want to go immediately to a local doctor. And then finally, this goes to the I actually use out-of-network care mostly, so I pay a little higher for my health care. But it's conceivably a doctor or a nurse, practitioner or a nurse, could be a medical professional, could be working with an in-network person, but be the referred person. They might be out-of-network. Isn't that possible? That the provider... Mm-hmm. could actually be out of network just through an in-network provider. And that actually is kind of an interesting thought that I'd like to, at some point know more about. But so I think you've answered, as I've been saying these things, the three questions. But those were my sort of three observations.
Mm-hmm. Linda?
I think that you'll have the opportunity to talk with some individual providers at the next hearing, and you can ask them questions about their decisions. I don't think I want to speak for their business decisions. What they have said to us is that it will allow them the fiscal certainty to be able to make business projections that will allow them to decide which kinds of technology they would want to invest in. If I may, Mr. Chair, I would also like to address the issue about pay parity that Senator Giesel mentioned earlier. And one of the earlier observations about cost was about the cost to invest in the software. An in-person visit may or may not include a medical assistant or a nurse assistant. It would probably depend on the individual visit, whether or not they would do that, but there is also the cost to provide, to maintain the software. There is also the issue of many times telehealth is provided not just at somebody's home using their cell phone, but it could be at a clinic. And one of the things that we have heard from providers, including Anchorage Community Mental Health and some of the community health centers across the state of Alaska, is that they have to pay to have somebody on both sides of a telehealth visit. If they have a provider, for example, if somebody came into Sunshine Medical Clinic in Talkeetna, and they are doing a telehealth consultation with somebody at the Heart Institute in Anchorage, they have somebody on site in Talkeetna as well as somebody in Anchorage at the Heart Institute. And so there's staffing issues there on both sides. And so I think it's difficult for us to clearly understand, to anticipate all of the financial costs associated with any individual telehealth visit, because there's such a range of visits. And I think that Ms. Cassort had the numbers on, or the list on, the most frequently offered services there, as that might be of interest to the committee, that there's like three categories that were the most frequently offered services.
Could you want to say that? Through the chair, those are behavioral health as well as injuries like a broken bone, often in the hands and arms, and poisoning and ear infections. Those are the most commonly diagnosed using telehealth in Alaska.
Thank you. Senator Geisel.
Mr. Chairman, I would just add that a broken bone does require an x-ray, of course, to be diagnosed. And even Girdwood Clinic, for at least two decades now, has been offering the x-ray taken there in Girdwood, then transmitted to a radiologist in Anchorage. Same with ear infections. The nurse practitioner there had an otoscope that actually transmitted the picture through telemedicine to an ear, nose, throat specialist in Anchorage. The other thing, Mr. Chairman, in answer to Senator Begich's question, the scenario that he was describing, you may be calling, I'm going to use Providence Hospital as an example, but it could be any hospital. You could be calling the hospital with a telemedicine question. That emergency room doctor may not be an employee of the hospital. And while the hospital you're calling may be in network, that emergency room doctor may be in a separate group that is outside your network. And that's where you get the surprise bill, right? That is paid at the very high rate, and yeah. So that's a whole nother subject.
Or the radiologist, anesthetician,
I don't think you'll get anesthesia by telemedicine, but yeah. You never know.
I don't know. I've got some podcasts.
All right. Well,
thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Rep. Sponholz. I do want to get to folks that are waiting online, the people who came today to testify. Like I said, we are going to bring this bill back up. We have a lot of other questions, I think, that we would like to get some answers to. One's obviously maybe like the reimbursement rates, and try to look at what inpatient visits versus what some of the companies already pay and some of those negotiated rates, if we can try to get some of that data, or we'll try to see what we can do to within our own state to look at that with our state teledoc program that we have. I think we have those, should have access to that, just to try to see what the parities are, because I understand the issue with as you mentioned about the, I worked for NTTU who had behavioral health consults at the time with API, and we always took a wash on those visits because we never got reimbursed the appropriate rates for that. And so, but it was still best for the patient at the time to have those med management appointments, to have those consults happen through telemedicine. So I appreciate that. But at this time, let's go ahead. And you had a couple folks that were here for invited testimony. If we can go through that. I think that Ms. Bailey was here. Does she have? Is there, if you can just put your name on the record? I do have a question for you personally, myself, too, but I know you're here for questions as well.
Yes, Sarah Bailey with the Division of Insurance. I'm the Life and Health Supervisor. And I'm here for questions only, no testimony.
Okay. I do know that certain providers that I've talked to about telemedicine, they will only see Alaskans in-state. Is that a state regulation, or is that just a company's preference? Is there something that is barring them from seeing Alaskans outside of the state of Alaska? So if I'm on travel, a lot of Alaskans are snowbirds, a lot of them travel through, and if I was out of state, would they still see me as a regular? Is there a state?
Are you, excuse me. Through the chair, are you referring to a healthcare provider or the insurer?
Either or. Both.
Okay. Through the chair, I work for the Division of Insurance, so I am not aware or know of the provider requirements. For the insurers, the insurance contract would say which providers would be in-network, out-of-network, or would not be covered. So it would depend on the circumstances and the contract language as well.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions for Ms. Bailey for the Division of Insurance? Also in line for questions, we have Claudia Tucker from Teladoc, and I think Vicki Knapp from Matsu Health Services. And we'll start with Ms. Knapp from Matsu Health Services.
Hello.
Hi, Vicki. If you want to put yourself on the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you. I'm having connectivity problems, so I've heard about a third of what's been said. I'm Victoria Knapp, Chief Operations Officer at Matsu Health Services. Thank you, Mr. Chairperson, as well as the committee, for hearing my testimony. I work for a federally qualified health center located in Wasilla with a satellite clinic now in Big Lake. We use telemedicine for psychiatric evaluations and psychiatric medication management. We went to a telemedicine model about 4 years ago because we are absolutely unable to find psychiatric providers in the state of Alaska. We have some providers located in Alaska that use telepsychiatry as well as some out of state. The person comes into our offices, they're seen by a medical assistant, they get all these same services that an in-person provider would be offering, and then they're shown to a room to connect via computer to either a psychiatrist or a psychiatric nurse practitioner. We have been very successful in using this model. Often staying on psychiatric medications is the key to someone being able to be a functioning, productive human being and maintain employment versus unable to manage symptoms and oftentimes resulting in hospitalization. The insurance carriers that don't cover telepsychiatry right now do cover in-person psychiatry services. So essentially, by not requiring it, the people with those insurance policies that do not are often unable to receive psychiatric care if needed because there's such a shortage of providers, especially in the Matsu Borough right now. It's often a very long wait list. And with that, I would take any questions.
Any questions for Ms. Knapp? Oh, thank you for being available, and thank you for your testimony. Also, most for invited testimony, we have Stuart Dr. Ferguson for Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium. Dr. Ferguson?
Good afternoon. Can you hear me okay at that end?
Yes, sir. If you can put your name on the record, and you may begin your invited testimony.
Well, thank you very much. My name is Stuart Ferguson. I am the Chief Information Officer at the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to address the committee on this bill. Just by way of background, I've been working in Alaska for 23 years building and operating telehealth systems, and I've served on the board of the American Telemedicine Association 8 years as a board member and president and vice president. Much of what I'd like to share with you today comes from 20 years of experience in operating our statewide telehealth program to serve the Alaska Tribal Health System. So you've heard some of the data from the earlier speakers, and I'd like to share some maybe additional information that gives you some insights into telehealth. We've been running telehealth in the Tribal Health System since 2001, so we're in our 20th year at this point. We've served about 135,000 patients at over 200 locations. We oftentimes talk about the cost of telehealth. Is it worth it? Why are we doing it? And when we built the system, we asked the doctors how we'd know if it gave value. And the answer we got was if we're still using it, you'll know it provides value because doctors aren't interested in wasting their time or money. Well, after 20 years, we've used 5,500 providers have used this system. They've done over 400,000 patient encounters. And annually, we average about 38,000 telehealth encounters. Sorry, I heard a beep. Is it okay?
No, please continue.
Okay, all right. I've been having some technical difficulties too. But we've also developed efficient processes, and you heard some data earlier, but it's actually gotten better. At the Alaska Native Medical Center, we turn around 50% of our consults in 60 minutes and 80% within the same day. And what that means is we can provide a level of care that exceeds an in-person visit. You cannot get a specialty consult in 60 minutes in Anchorage or Seattle, but you can if you're in a rural location. We've embraced a form of telehealth as described earlier by Casey, store and forward, where we capture information and send it. That's been very effective, and we started doing that in rural Alaska because of bandwidth challenges. But we've done more live video conferencing lately as bandwidth has improved. We currently do about 2,400 follow-up visits each year with patients from the Alaska Native Medical Center, and it's used extensively for primary care. We now provide over 40 different pediatric, surgical, and adult medical services at ANMC, and we now accept specialty consults over video conferencing. We, as a tribal health system, are investing in an expansion this year, and we're deploying over 120 more video conferencing units specifically to address opioid and substance use treatment, as well as education and broadening our mental health offerings. We do talk about the ability for telehealth to save travel. I think that's extremely important, but you probably ought to be aware that not all telehealth saves travel. We find that about 15 to 20% of telehealth causes travel, and that's good travel because it's something that we're catching earlier in a disease state and oftentimes avoiding unnecessary complications or expensive medvacs. So when we actually try to estimate travel savings, we ask providers on every single encounter if it impacted patient travel, so we can very precisely estimate what cases prevented travel, where the patient was, the age of the patient, and the provider location to get fairly accurate estimates on travel savings. When we look at the Alaska Medicaid population that we serve in the tribal health system, we estimate we had a total travel savings in FY19 of $12.4 million through all of the telehealth efforts we do, and a total savings for the past 8 years of $70 million. And that's just Medicaid. If we look at all the patients we serve in Alaska, we estimate a total travel savings in FY19 of about $27 million and a total of $156 million in the past years. And keep in mind that's a pessimistic view because we only count travel when a provider says it's saved travel. If we counted all of our cases, as many in the lower 48 do, you could roughly double those numbers. More importantly, when patients travel, they run the risk of accidents in the travel, but they also lose work days and children miss attendance at school. We did an analysis of 5,925 telehealth specialty consults billed to Alaska Medicaid, and we actually determined that for every 5 telehealth encounters, we prevented 4 lost work days and 1 lost school day. So if you look at our 8-year history across all of our patients in the Alaska Tribal Health System, we've saved roughly 245,000 lost work days and 61,000 lost school days for patients using telehealth. We applaud the language in HB 29 that removes the need for an in-person exam prior to telehealth. We have some evidence to support this. Dr. Phil Hofstadter, an audiologist working at the Norton Sound Regional Hospital, led a groundbreaking 20-year retrospective study to look at specifically this. The study looked at the waiting time that new referrals were waiting to see a specialist in person, and he looked at the changes in those wait times when he implemented telehealth to do that initial exam. Prior to telehealth, for a 10-year episode, 47% of new patient referrals waited 5 months or longer to see a specialist, 47%. Once we implemented telehealth, we dropped from 47% of the patients to only 8% of all the patients waited that 5 months or more. And 3 years later, as we improved processes, we dropped that down to 3% of all patients that waited this long. So moving from the requirement for an in-person exam to a virtual visit saves time, improves outcomes, and allows more patients to be treated. We've done similar studies looking at diabetic retinal exams, village-based hearing exams, and triage models, even in other states, where we use virtual visits with a specialist to access care and treatment, all without an in-person visit. And every single study we've done has consistently demonstrated faster treatment paths, lower costs, greater access, and improved outcomes. None of this is possible without connectivity, and we've touched on that earlier in the session today. The Alaska Tribal Health Organizations, in fact, all rural organizations, depend on a subsidy program that's regulated by the FCC and funded through the Universal Services Administrative Company, or USAC. You may know, or you may be surprised to know, that the cost for connectivity in rural Alaska runs 50 to 100 times higher than the Anchorage rates. The USAC program subsidizes that additional cost beyond the Anchorage rates for healthcare organizations, schools, and libraries, but homes are not subsidized. And honestly, that's the great digital divide we face. In the lower 48, people are talking about 5G and 6G. In Alaska, 50% of our villages do not even have 3G. And when you do have connectivity, it's expensive and it's restricted to monthly allotments. But we have demonstrated that we can move telehealth into the home. We take care of end-of-life or palliative care patients in that way. We also know we have an extremely vulnerable population in our newborns. Those that have congenital abnormalities or respiratory issues account for 70% of all Medicaid costs for children in their first year of birth. We can bring specialists and subspecialists into the home as a strong step toward taking care of that vulnerable population. And we don't have to stop at the clinic. The Norton Sound School District has gone one step further. They're trying to treat ear disease, where we have the highest rates in the world, in schools, and bringing in the health system into the school. My staff's working on next generations of tools and apps to do all this. We intend in the coming year to empower our patients to participate in their health care from their homes. The FCC, for the first time, is now offering free licenses to tribes and tribal organizations to license radio spectrums in their village, which allows us to get into the homes, the last mile issue. Low Earth orbit satellites, another from OneWeb, SpaceX, and other companies may offer solutions to connect the villages to the rest of the world. And together, these technologies can revolutionize connectivity to all of Alaska with low-cost, high-performance bandwidth. Well, why am I saying this? Well, we invest in the tribal health system, and I know that Providence and other providers do the same. We invest millions of dollars each year on connectivity and telehealth technologies because we know it works. But unfortunately, in the past, federal and state policies have greatly lagged the advances in investment in telehealth technology and program design. For example, the department's recently proposed telemedicine regulations that thankfully have been withdrawn would have eliminated reimbursement for store and forward processes, something that accounts for 90% of our telehealth. This is troubling, and we should instead be protecting and supporting our telehealth progress and infrastructure. We truly are a state of innovators, and we've built successful telehealth programs because we work together, all of us, to meet the common goal of better health closer to home. I'll finish by saying I applaud this committee for considering a bill that can expand the usage of telehealth. I would ask all of you on this committee and all of our legislators to stay connected to the advances in what's happening in technology and healthcare, and I believe together we will build and provide better healthcare. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any questions for Dr. Ferguson? Senator Giesel.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony, Dr. Ferguson. Who reimburses for the telehealth that ANTHC provides?
Through the chair, Senator Giesel. So we do seek reimbursement through all payers. We've been very thankful that Medicaid has reimbursed for telehealth since 2001, as have many other payers. I am aware of at least one payer that does not reimburse. I guess I'd rather not name them. But the power of this bill is that we can actually now see all payers reimbursing.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. Dr. Ferguson, do you have a number of beneficiaries that seek services as tribal health members? You don't really have an insurance card for your IHS benefits when you travel out of IHS coverage area. Do you have a lot of folks that seek to use sort of a telehealth as they are out of sort of the IHS coverage area?
Through the chair, Mr. Senator, are you kind of addressing the issue if they're outside of Alaska and still need care outside of the tribal health system?
Yes.
And would use telehealth?
Yes. For example, my spouse is a tribal health beneficiary. If we travel out of state to Florida on vacation and she injures herself or gets ill or sick, do you have a lot of folks like that would just call in for sort of health consults? Or folks that may just snowbird to Arizona and they're outside of that tribal health system in Arizona and they live in, let's say, the Phoenix area?
Yeah, through the chair, Mr. Senator. It's an interesting issue. I'm not aware, quite frankly, of our patients that seek care through telehealth when they're outside of the state. I don't think there's necessarily a reason that would not be offered or available to them. I'm just not aware of that request having come to us.
And just as a follow-up, ATNAC, through ANMC, would see a lot of non-beneficiaries through the Anchorage Service Unit. Is that still a service available for non-beneficiaries who may be seen through the Anchorage Service Unit of folks that receive a sort of the dual IHS and CHC facilities?
Yeah, through the chair, Mr. Senator. I think the issue you're addressing is if a non beneficiary is seen, say, at a primary care site, can they be referred into the Alaska Native Medical Center? The answer is we do take non-beneficiaries at the Alaska Native Medical Center. That's a change that happened some years ago. Does that answer your question?
Yes, that will work. We'll follow up here with more detail. Any other questions for Dr. Ferguson? All right, thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
With that, I believe we'll open it up to public testimony. Is anyone here in the room in Junos? I don't have anyone signed up, but anyone here in the room like to testify on House Bill 29? Seeing none, we'll go to the phone lines here. We'll plan about 3 minutes for testimony. First on the line, we do have Chris Diedrich from Orion Health. If you could state your name and affiliation and plan about 3 minutes for your testimony. Chris? Is your phone mute? You may be on mute. Okay, we'll come back to you, Chris. We'll go to Anita Halterman and the Anchorage LIO. Anita, if you could put your name on the record and plan about 3 minutes for your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Anita Halterman. I am presenting on behalf of AKCTT, which is the Alaska Collaborative for Telemedicine and Telehealth. I thank you for the opportunity to weigh in on this piece of legislation. I'd just like to start with a statement. First off, telemedicine is a mode of delivery. Standards of practice don't change or shouldn't based on that mode of delivery. If they do, that's where medical boards should establish standards of practice. If they don't properly respond, that's when legislation becomes necessary. My asks with regards to this piece of legislation, first off, I'm highly supportive. The Alaska Collaborative for Telemedicine and Telehealth is extremely supportive of this piece of legislation. We ask that, that there be consideration about licensing issues moving forward so as not to limit access to providers who may not be subject to an Alaska license. We also ask that payment parity issues be addressed. It is critical for the success of telemedicine that when we're expanding this mode of delivery, that efficiencies will be gained and drive down cost savings for insurers through this mode of delivery. And it will ensure that payment parity will ensure that practices in the lower 48 don't undermine the infrastructure that we have available here in Alaska. I frankly would like us to maintain the providers that we have, and the payment parity piece will ensure that we don't erode those practices any further. New modes of delivery do save medical insurance companies money. If you examine what happened with Kaiser Permanente, for instance, they're a self-insured provider down in the lower 48. With self-insured providers, they are expanding the use of telemedicine because it is driving cost savings for insurance companies. It is also driving better health outcomes. So those are things that Alaska can benefit from if we move forward with this kind of legislation. The American Medical Association has been making pleas that medical boards remove barriers to telemedicine. There have been barriers placed throughout the country. Slowly, those boards are responding, but unfortunately for Alaska, not fast enough to move us. We are in a fee-for-service environment, which doesn't motivate a whole lot of change. When insurance companies don't pay for telemedicine for their patients, patients may be dumped on Medicaid programs for services that insurance companies would typically provide service for. Medicaid bears the brunt of funding care through cost avoidance for telemedicine, because that scope of delivery is not available through an insurance company, and insurers don't often pay for travel. So I have learned that patients who are unable to receive their services through insurance companies often find themselves on hard times, especially if they're sick. They may lose their health insurance, and Medicaid ends up footing the bill. So in support of this legislation, AKCTT will be writing in a letter of support for this piece of legislation, and we fully embrace this option to move forward with this kind of technology advancement for our people here in Alaska. It will help us drive down better health outcomes. We have hospitals that are starting to explore relationships with out-of-state contractors now and are providing these services and piloting programs. I would like to see it expanded to the entire state, and I do think there will be some cost savings for Medicaid if we do so. So I want to thank you for the opportunity to weigh in, and we will be sending in a letter of support. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Halterman. Are you available for a question from a senator?
You bet.
Okay, Senator Baggage.
Thank you. Right before you talked about the pay issue, you mentioned another issue which I did not understand. So I wonder if you would be so kind as to go over that very first point you brought up in the concerns you had for the bill. I just didn't understand what you said, and if you could just expand on that point, please. Thank you.
Are you talking about the Kaiser Permanente and the self-insured and hospitals in the lower 48?
No, it was the very first thing. Very first thing that you said right before you talked about the parity issue.
The license. Are you talking about the licensing issue, making sure that we don't limit providers who may not be subject to Alaska license?
Yes. Could you explain that a little bit? I didn't understand that at all.
We are facing a changed environment, and right now there's the possibility that with the expansion of telemedicine, there will be new delivery methods available using new provider types. For instance, with remote patient monitoring, many of the providers that may be subject to those kind of services are not subject to licensure. They're an atypical service provider under the Social Security Act. And so I would just caution to be careful about being too restrictive with the licensing requirements in this particular statute.
Follow-up, Senator?
I can't follow up with what I don't know, Mr. Chairman, so... There's something that's not striking me as comfortable about the comment, and I think what I need to do is just after the meeting, I'll have a conversation with the sponsor of the bill and just see if I can get some more clarity on the issue.
Senator Giesel.
Mr. Chairman, that was my question as well. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you, Ms. Halterman, for your testimony this afternoon. And it looks like Mr. Dietrich is offline. We also have Claudia Tucker from Teladoc Health. I know she's available for questions. I don't know if anyone has questions for Ms. Tucker, or Ms. Tucker wanted to provide any comments of your own.
Yes, good evening, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm glad to answer any questions. A couple of things I'd like to point out. I'm Vice President of Government Affairs for Teladoc Health and also the chair of the American Telemedicine Association Policy Board. We're operational in all 50 states and 120 countries, so I've got a pretty good perspective on telemedicine. But there were a couple of things that were brought up earlier about, one of them was security. You know, how do you know that the person you're treating is who they say they are? And at Teladoc Health, we are not direct consumer. So an employee can only access our portal through their health plan or as an employee with a number. And so we verify all that, and we also make sure that our physicians provide the patient with their licensure number and their credentials. So it's kind of like what you do with your bank, Teladoc Health, while we're in healthcare. We're really a technology company who is focused on healthcare. The other thing I wanted to talk about, we talked about the physician shortage, and we've got resident physicians who are there in Alaska, and then we've also got Alaska licensed physician who are elsewhere in the state. What we do is that when a call comes in from an Alaskan resident, the first chance to pick up that call goes to an Alaska resident physician. If they don't pick it up, then another physician who is licensed in Alaska will pick it up. So I just want to let the committee know that we give preference to Alaska physicians. We strongly support House Bill 29. We believe that if a healthcare provider provides a service, they should be reimbursed. However, we also realize that there are savings in telemedicine. So while a bricks and mortar visit may be $145, an average Teladoc visit or our competitors is about $49. And so we caution that you should not set the floor. If there's reimbursement $145 to a physician, that's fine as a bricks and mortar. But if as a telehealth physician, we're willing to accept less, then we shouldn't be forced to accept more. So I just caution against that, because then you'll be taking that savings from the patient and from the employer or health plan. But we strongly support House Bill 29, and I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Tucker, for your comments. Any questions? All right, seeing none, thank you for your time today. Appreciate it. Thus, I don't see anyone else signed up online, and no one else joined us in the room for testimony, so we'll go ahead and close public testimony. This time we'll invite the sponsor back if she has any other comments or questions, seeing or hearing none from her. We will bring this bill back up to committee, so please, we'll try to get some answers to questions and pass that information out. And then we'll work with the bill sponsor and see if she wants to add any amendments as she discussed to bring before the committee. Senator Giesel.
Mr. Chairman, would it be possible to have Lori Wing-Heyer present at our next hearing, perhaps, or on the phone?
Yes, our understanding was that she was supposed to be here today, but okay. We will ask her to see if her availability to schedule that.
That'd be great. Thank you.
With that, any other further committee comments for the day? All right. On Monday, we will have initial hearing on Senate Bill 173, License for Mobile Intensive Care Paramedics by Senator Rivack. And on Wednesday, Commissioner Crum will be here to give a departmental update on what's new and exciting happening since we adjourned from session last year till date. With that, that closes our business for this afternoon. We are adjourned at 2:52 p.m.